Thanks for coming today. Yes, the title of the seminar is Spooky Pinball Speaks About Cool New Stuff. If you're expecting a game announcement, that's probably not going to happen today. We wanted to be the one company that didn't debut a game here this year. I'm just kidding. But we do have some cool new stuff to talk about. Lots of cool new stuff. We're going to show a little video, kind of a walkthrough of the new Spooky Pinball World headquarters in Benton, Wisconsin, all 5,104 square feet of it. We've come a long way in 4 years. We've done a lot of things, I think, pretty well. We've got a lot of things we need to improve on, and we know that. Can't thank everybody who owns a game. How many people here own a Spooky Pinball game?
Yay!
Yay! Cool! We'll try to get more hands next year. We're going to increase production capacity. I've already said, like on Pinside, we want to keep prices down. We're going to $62.50 on our next game to help cover some engineering and get some more talent in-house, the things we need to do to grow and make our games a little bit more professional. I think that's, you know, I get asked constantly this weekend, especially with all the new games being announced and everything about prices. I kind of want to stay in that price range. We don't want to go over that. And I'm hoping we can hold that for a good 3 to 5 years, and then we'll talk and see what the price of copper and glass and everything else is at that stage. So, but I think the biggest thing going forward, and y'all know Ben Hack, he's been a big part of why we've ever been able to do this, is we're going to keep Ben around. He's sticking around, and he will be designing another game for Spooky Pinball.
I don't know what I can really say about it, so.
We can't tell you the title yet, but it will be a license.
It's not Bible Adventures.
It's not Bible Adventures. But Ben will be the lead designer on it. He'll also be doing the programming.
Is the next game that you announce?
No, it's not the next one.
Nope. We could have had another game here this weekend, but kind of with all the excitement and everything going on, so many games making their debut, we decided that don't rush it. We're going to hold it back a little bit. We do have another contract gig. This is the game I'm referring to. The contract manufacturing jobs are fantastic for growing a company. Pinball is so rough and so hard, and as we learned with America's Most Haunted, it didn't sell out overnight. I mean, it took a couple of years for people to really get to understand it and give it a chance. And where was I going with this?
I don't know.
But
a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush?
Yes. But yeah, it's the contract gigs are incredibly helpful to grow your company and give you some stability and hire people. And, you know, everything we've done so far, America's Most Haunted, like I said, it was a hard sell originally, eventually did sell out, which was absolutely fantastic. But
it was the ghost boobs that did it. That's what pushed it over the edge.
The realistic ghost boob physics that are on the display. Basically, what I'm trying to say is when somebody comes in and says, hey, you don't have to sell this game, we'll pay you to build it, you take that job, because pinball is so crazy. You never know what's going to happen. One bad game can really turn a company on its ear.
Yeah, people wondered why you did the Domino's game, and I was like, wow, I'm so proud of Chuck. He's becoming a corporate person.
And Domino's, it's here. It's still for sale until KT, December 31st. Is that correct?
Between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay.
There's going to be more Domino's out there than America's Most Haunted, probably, right?
It's getting to that point, yes. It's $52.99 if you like it, and I understand that a Domino's pizza theme is, you know, not a theme that most pinball guys are going, boy, I wish somebody would do that. It was definitely aimed at Domino's, but I've been very shocked and surprised by the number of pinball people that are just buying it because they like the game or they want to support us or whatever the case may be. So
it will take a little bit longer than 30 minutes or less to build, though.
Let's see, advances in our board set.
Oh.
Ben has been working very hard on said next contract manufacturing game. Our display will be bigger. As you see on Domino's and Rob Zombie, it is an LCD, but we weren't fully using it, and Ben can probably explain why.
How much geeky detail do you want?
Well, not too much.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, one of the persons who's helped us with our code in the past is Roy Eflam. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He's big into pinball out west, and he's a really great guy because he's a video game programmer by day. He's also into pinball, and he also wrote an assembler, well, a compiler for one of the microcontrollers that we use on our board. So he knows that thing inside and out. So he and I worked together earlier this year, and like, let's see what else we can squeeze out of this 11-year-old chip, because that's how old it is. Because my thought was, I really like old computers and old video game systems. I love all that stuff, and I look at things like the Sinclair Spectrum from the UK, computers like that. I'm like, wow, this thing is so amazingly cheap. And I tried to be inspired by that. So that's one thing we've done. We've tried to keep our board set incredibly simple.
And trust me, Ben is very cheap. He mm-hmm. slept under our desk last night.
I did. I literally drank myself under the table. Anyway, yeah, so what Roy and I did was we were like, I think we can squeeze some more performance out of this. So as you know, we have a color display now on our mm-hmm. games. And we use that as kind of a double buffer. So since we don't have enough RAM, we're like, well, if we stream things line by line from the video chip into the display, we can have a taller display. So, yeah, the next game that you're going to announce that pretty soon, though. Just
pretty soon, yeah. Yeah, it'll be out very soon.
Yeah, so the display is the same as what you see on Rob Zombie and Domino's. It's just twice as tall. So it won't be quite as big as the display that Stern has now on Batman, but it's the next step for us.
Right, and I think it's a good combination. It's the next logical step for us was to fully utilize the height of the display. Don't really want to go any bigger than that. I have no desire to throw a Jihustic LCD in the back of the game. I think that's great, but it's a lot more work. It's a lot more money.
Yeah, there's a lot of art liability when you make a display that big.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dialed In has handled it well.
Yes.
Have, like the city and whatnot and the news reports, I think that's clever. But if you think about it, from that perspective, it's like you have like Wizard of Oz or The Hobbit, you've got plenty of footage to work with. But when you do an original theme or anything really, it's like, what do we fill that screen with? So a smaller screen does make it a little easier.
Correct.
Less work to do in that aspect.
And if you've noticed, we've kind of done all this in logical steps. We first went to the color display, DMD style animations and everything. Now we're going taller, and it'll still be basically that same kind of DMD style. And then beyond
yes.
that, to really ramp up the display, this is where Ben and Parker Dillman at MacroFab come in.
Yeah, Parker Dillman is our board designer, and he works down at a company in Texas that's really growing as well.
Yep.
The companies have kind of grown together.
Yes, they have. We started almost identically at the same time.
Yeah, actually, we were one of their we were one of either the first or second major contract they had down
mm-hmm.
there. Yeah, and we're also working on different board stuff for the future, like different displays and whatnot. But
in essence, that 11-year-old chip Ben was talking about will go away, and it'll be more of a Linux-based, better resolution, all that kind of stuff.
Right. We're just in the preliminary thoughts about that.
Yep.
But you know, I think we could squeeze a few more games out of the board set we have now, and the cost is very reasonable because we made, and that's actually a lot beefier. If you have the board that's in America's Most Haunted versus the one that's in Rob Zombie. The Rob Zombie board it's like a four-layer board. It has even more fuses. It has better protection. It's the same system, but it's on steroids. And it actually, we did it for the same cost. So we added features, removed things we didn't need, and made it better, and kept the price basically the same, right?
Well, America's Most Haunted was completely original, and it was $59.95. Rob Zombie was a license, a color display, and a lot of other dramatic improvements,
right.
The ball trough, everything else that went into it, and we did not raise the price. So, kind
right.
of
well, an LCD is a lateral move as far as cost.
It is, but it's a lot of development time and
yes.
And
so the display is actually cheaper, but it costs more to put images, to draw images for it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's what we try to do. You know, if we're like, okay, we want to add this, can we, you know, reduce costs. It's kind of like the appendix you have in your body. You don't really need it. Electronics are like that, too. It's like, do we really need this, you know, $6 integrated circuit that the home user never needs because it's there for development? Like, yank it out. But you'll never notice that because you don't need to program your games. You can update with the SD card.
So basically all the new cool stuff that we're talking about is hardware, people, the talent for sure. I mean, David Van Ness, who did a fantastic job with all the graphics and everything on Domino's, and Rob Zombie, we're bringing him in to get him more involved, kind of making that hopefully a full-time position very soon. I don't think Ben's going to be 100% full-time because he's still this famous internet web show guy.
Famous. You know Ben Heck had a YouTube channel?
Oh, he has a YouTube channel. It's very cool.
Yeah. I think it's funny if I run into someone, they're like, oh, you do pinball, and they don't know about the YouTube channel. So it's kind of fun when you're recognized for the opposite thing. That's fun.
It's great when you go to like the Midwest Gaming Classic, like, because from yesterday I walked in the door at about 1 o'clock and it took me like 3 hours to get to my room because everybody's, hey, Charlie. And then you go to the Midwest Gaming Classic and nobody cares who I am. And they're like, oh, you're Ben Heck. And he's like, yes, I am me. And then you realize, yeah, that.
Yeah, some people on my web show.
Pretty geeky
some
famous.
Some people on my web show are starting to get noticed in public, like Felix and Max and Karen. So, yeah, it's fun. We're just working to, if we can save money on things, simplify things, and, you know, whatever we do, try to keep the cost as reasonable as possible. And if there is an added cost, we want that to be in toys, mechs, the durability of the game, and labor, the people to make the game thematically as good as it can be.
We've gone from literally myself and sitting in a room in Benton, and Ben is in Madison, and for 1 year made that work. Hired two people in the second year, and right now there's a dozen of us. So it keeps growing. We're now the third largest employer in Benton, Wisconsin. We're behind the bank and the school. We're not going to beat the school, but we probably will pass the bank here pretty quick. So it's pretty cool. And we are going to be adding onto the shop. We're going to be building a freight dock. We just bought a nice vacuum forming machine that's back being set up while I'm here working. And we've got a partner on that deal, and he's going to be making all of our ramps in-house and everything. We try very hard to bring as much in-house as we can. Clearly, we do that with our, you know, everything from the inserts to the play fields to the cabinets and all our graphics and everything that we do. It's all done in-house. We laser cut our own stuff. We print our own every bit of it. Clearly, the common parts are coming from Terry at Pinball Life. We want everything to be familiar, comfortable for your pinball guys. So, and that's never going to change. The serviceability of the board has always been an argument between Ben and I. I like that the chips are not surface mount and that they are socketed. I like that the MOSFETs are replaceable by the, you know, person with an average skill set, even though it would be cheaper, faster, better.
Yeah, I think that's a battle you're going to eventually lose, but okay.
I like to keep it just the familiarity of the boards and stuff. I mean, how many people have repaired a Williams board over the years? Yeah, exactly. There. I rest my case, Ben.
Yeah.
They can work on your board.
Surface mount is not that bad.
And how about the podcast, Bug? I no longer am the host of the Spooky Pinball Podcast. I am merely the co-host.
Your mom now?
Yes. Yeah. I wouldn't say I've been reduced to your mother because she's pretty awesome. But
thank you. I don't know what you want me to say about the podcast.
Have you enjoyed taking it over? You having fun? You interviewed Brian Kelly in your hotel room yesterday. That was fun.
Yeah, we talked about shoes. It's a lot of fun to work on the podcast. It really. Like, it's fun to just get to meet new pinball people and get cool interviews in and just start that early to get me set for, like, all the years of pinball that we have coming for the company, hopefully the company's still around in, like, 30, 40 years. And
I hope so, too.
I know you do.
I hope you're running it. I don't want anything to do with it in 40 years.
He'll be dead in 40 years. He'll be like Phil from Duck Dynasty. He'll show up and just take the check and go home and
I'm good with
relax.
That. I'm good with that. So how's the Adventures of Lion Man been with Doug Watson?
It has been amazing to work on. I'm very honored to get to write the whole story out for however long it's going to take. I can imagine 10 or 12 episodes.
For those of you that haven't been keeping up with the podcast, essentially what happened is we had Doug Watson on the show, and the whole Lion Man, you know, kind of minor cult craze came up in the conversation, and we asked him, "Who is Lion Man?
Where did
Lion
Man come?"
He didn't know. He's like, "Lion Man is this guy, and I really don't know anything about him." So, like a week later, Bug gets this email that's a mile long about the whole backstory of where Lion Man came from, why he is Lion Man. It was unbelievable. So, Bug started a segment on the show that runs about 10 minutes every month, and like he said, 12 parts. That is the Adventures of Lion Man with Doug Manley as Lion Man, because if you don't know, Doug actually started Lion Man years ago. He's the nut job responsible for the 8 million posts on Pinside that just say Lion Man for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Because Lion Man.
Yeah. That's why. So, we're looking for Brian Balrog Kelly. I know it sounds like a really weird WWE name, but... That's the main villain. When he sent it to me, it honestly, when I read it, it sounded like a serious Lord of the Rings type book.
So dumb.
And we gotta make it, we gotta make it funny and like pinball related. You know, grab anybody we know from pinball, change the names around, change what they're looking for. So instead of like a ring, it could be for a pop bumper cap or something.
I'm sure it's been for Spotted Cow lately.
Spotted Cow, yes.
Cows in pinball.
All right, Ben, I think it's time to fire up the video. What we're going to do is we're going to show you about a 9-minute video, which is essentially a walkthrough of the Spooky Pinball Shop. So, and if you need a good AV guy, Ben is, yeah, if you can get access to him, you're doing okay, I guess. Go ahead. This is our little arcade game room, and the reason I'm aiming up is because the next game is sitting in the corner over there.
Good shot of outside.
There's the Minion collectible shelf. This is basically Minions that people just send us because they know I like Minions a lot. It's an incredibly messy desk area. This game right here is Rob Zombie's personal game, and this is something new going forward. As you can see, this is a direct printed automotive clear coated cabinet. There are no decals, and it is absolutely gorgeous. And on our next house title, that will be an option, a very, very high-end, crazy, expensive option. It's a pain to do, but man, when you pull it off, it really looks good. It's our old printing equipment. There's all kinds of crazy stuff all over the walls from years of going to shows and everything. There's the old Godzilla decals for the custom game.
The only reason why there's blankets over the windows is because it gets really freaking hot in there to start with, and then when the sun's hitting from that direction, it's unbearable. So
memorabilia.
I just need to get curtains.
Yeah. These are all games that are in test, and the Medieval Madness I finally drug home a couple weeks ago. I've always wanted that game. There's about half a mile of wire hanging there. Those are the wire harnesses that we do make in house.
How many four choruses worth of wire is that?
I'm not sure. I think it's just one. There's our Sven Gulli autographed rubber chicken. We were very privileged to do that. There's all kinds of Rob Zombie backstage stuff for
Lion Man,
of course. Python Angelo pinball circus playfields that we made. There's original apron topper that we had done for when I was still with the Jersey Jack stuff. Autographed silver ball stuff from Ed Robertson, Eddie Munster, Butch Patrick. Stuff from a senator. Things I never dreamed that we'd get. Bug and I are A-Division trophy winners. It was all him. I did nothing. Here's our 3D printer plastic table shelf. Melanie stuff from
back
in the day.
Painting there that was sent in by a contest for who could draw the best.
So it was AMH Original, Wrath of Olympus, AMH Pinball Zombies, Scorgasm Master. These are games. This is my... one of our workers, Seth, this is a Flight 2000. He just clear-coated. It's his very first pinball machine.
There's a reason you can't see Tales from the Crypt.
There's dominoes. There's some more stuff that we've done for other companies, of course, multimorphic stuff there. Rob Zombie playfields that are in various stages of assembly. This is a playfield cabinet. Here's some domino stuff getting ready to go into production on Monday. There's... Boom. I'm such a professional photographer. I literally did this on my phone right before I left. Ramps for dominoes that we just finished assembling. These are our first full stainless steel ramps that we've ever done in a game. We wanted it to look like kitchen equipment. Another half mile of wire.
My work area.
This is Bug's assembly area where he does a lot of small parts assembly.
I get to look at the wall That's it.
Here's the dominoes that will be the first one assembled on Monday morning. More ramps, all the mechanical parts, everything is in each work area. We have three PlayStation, PlayStation. We have three PlayStation work areas. Scoops all assembled. Three playfield assembly areas and three cabinet assembly areas. On a good day, we bang out four cabinets and three to four playfields a day. So essentially, we're up to about three or four games a day right now is what we can produce.
What did you start at?
When we started out, we were one every 2 weeks. Cabinet getting prepped and ready. Flipper Fidelity speakers piled everywhere. Coin doors all pre-wired.
Larger on Rob Zombie.
Yeah, the subwoofer on Rob Zombie is actually a 10-inch sub, and it thumps. It's really, really good. We're also working on developing our own amplification system, so that little audio amplifier will be going away.
I think the best compliment we ever got on the sound was people thought AMH had a shaker.
Yeah. Yeah, we get the, oh, it's got a shaker. No, it doesn't. It's got great audio in it. Here's a Rob Zombie, about half assembled, ready to go. Living Dead Girl plastics all assembled with the figures and everything attached. Everything's pre-wired. There's plastics with all the flashers. So it's really it's a real pinball company at this stage. We're actually manufacturing stuff. Here would be a stand for another cabinet. And then we're walking down towards, let's see, this would be another cabinet assembly station. All the upper play fields all assembled. Getting ready for corpse pile attachment. Done by Matt at Back Alley, who does a wonderful job on all our toys. And then these are games that are in final testing. And basically, if you get a game and something is wrong with it, it's my fault because I am the last person that looks at every single game that leaves the shop. Serial numbers for all 300 Rob Zombies, as you can see, we're a little over halfway on those.
How many games did you have lined up after vacation when you got back?
25.
And 11 of them shipped over the week.
Yeah. More parts for final testing. They punch all the boards and or all the wires to attach to the boards. And there's Habitrails back from Powder Coat. More games in final testing. These are ready for playfield drops. That one's clearly got to have the head attached.
Those are all going to Australia.
Yes, those are all our Australian games. They're all pretty much done. We're just making sure they're all together in one group. And then they'll all go in a container together. If they're not in a box, those games are getting picked up, which surprisingly a lot of people do. We actually had a guy drive all the way down from Ontario last Sunday. And yes, I will meet you at the shop on a Sunday and deliver your game if that's what we need to do. The Spooky Cemetery behind our decal shelf here that we just built, this is the top secret design lab, the Dwight Frye Memorial Mausoleum and Design Lab. So we're going to go in here, and no, we're not. And... Yep. Piles of pallets, our little mini kitchen.
Workout station that doesn't get used.
There's Billy the Ghost or the Grim Reaper. I don't know why we call him Billy.
Supernatural thing.
Okay. Miss Pac-Man over the ladies' room, of course. You know, you got to have that. In the lurid ladies' room.
You got huge
Pac-Man
signs. Pac-Man
over the men's room. Those signs were supposed to go outside, but then I got a better sign, and they were free. This is our world-famous men's room at the Spooky Pinball World Headquarters. If you're lucky and you make the Battle Zone wall of photos.
It's kind of weird having a Lady Frankenstein tacked onto the wall in there.
Got to have Godzilla stuff everywhere you go. And, of course, decals. There's a sign that got ripped off the school that we replaced. So we do lots of little things for the Village of Benton. This is our mechanical room. And we kind of call it the Room of Shame. As you can see, we got out of there quickly. This is a playfield test rig.
Hey, I designed that.
Yes, Bug designed that. This is Bug's first playfield layout. As you can see, he pretty much screwed things everywhere. That playfield has over 2 million air balls on it without cracking the finish. And we're really proud of that. Back glasses, real back glasses, ready to go in games, and that's it. That's a walkthrough of our new shop, which that thing was built in March and is that full. There is no room to put much of anything else into it, and yeah, we will be adding on in the spring and putting in a freight dock and all kinds of cool stuff, so... Yes, sir.
Can you name some of the suppliers that are the traditional pinball suppliers, the Chicago-based suppliers that you use?
Sure. Actually, I think KT would be better. She is our buying/purchasing/ HR gal.
Slash payroll.
She does all that.
Terry is from Pinball Life is obviously one of our biggest suppliers. Who all do we buy from? Matt does all of our toys from Back Alley Creations.
And then there's like 50 little ones that would bore you to death.
All of our speakers.
Well, those are the cool things, you know. But you got to find those little damn standoff plastic butyrate spacers, and you know that's a. There's like,
Net for MassCons and DMV, Des Moines Nut and Bolt, which just got bought out by Worth. They supply us with all of our wire, screws, nuts, pins. It comes by the pallet every time I order from them.
We use a lot of the same supply. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the pinball common parts go back 50 years, and we all use the same suppliers.
You might actually be getting Foremost Plastics, but through Terry or something like that, actually made by Foremost, perhaps.
No.
We cut our own.
We do all our plastics.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't use Foremost or Northern, not because they're bad.
Stuff. They do posts and such.
Yeah.
If it's a star post or any of that stuff, that all comes from Terry.
And I mean, we've got a wonderful, wonderful relationship with Terry and Margaret and Scott DeNisi. They have grown right with us. They do a lot. Like, you see all the flipper assemblies and the slingshot assemblies and all that stuff. A lot of that has... It is traditional. It would fit in a Williams game. It goes back a long way, but at the same time, it's been adapted to be unique to Spooky Pinball.
There's a lot of standard Spooky parts now.
Right? Yeah, they're really the ball trough.
We have our own section on their website.
Dutch uses the ball trough as well, don't they?
I believe so. Yeah, and the idea was, if Terry can mass produce it and sell it to other boutique companies as they come along, that it would help keep our costs down. Yeah, it saves us so much time and money and engineering and getting all that kind of stuff done because they are there. And they've been a fantastic partner with us.
Like the pop bumpers, right?
Yeah. Anything Terry can mass produce that we will use, we say if other people want to, please do, because it helps him to get stuff in faster, and then it helps us so I can order faster. Literally, at this point, I place 2 purchase orders every 2 weeks for what we can pick up personally in the trailer and bring back, which is about 25 games worth. So we're literally picking up 25 games worth of parts from Terry that fills our entire trailer
and
comes back to Benton, and a fourth of it gets rushed out to be powder coated right away.
But
it's like gets back to the spirit of cooperation from the 30s and 40s when the suppliers were doing the same thing, and they weren't trying to have each manufacturer tie up things.
We share a lot of stuff. I mean, I've literally had other pinball companies or game-making companies have called us in a pinch. They're like, oh, my God, we just ran out of this, and it's on back order from China for such and such a time. Do you have, like, 1 or 2 we could... Yeah, sure, here you go.
Yeah.
And I ship them off to them, and I've done the same thing in reverse. I'm like... Oh crap! We were, you know, this is still on back order. I don't have them coming in until such and such a time, you know. So we try to help out everybody that we really can.
Didn't we have to get the ball trough back from Dutch Pinball in time for the reveal of Rob Zombie? Remember that? There's only like one of those ball troughs at one time.
Yeah, we had like 3 prototype ball troughs, and we got one. Dutch got one, and one was in our programmer's game. We literally Dutch Pinball like sent us a ball trough quickly because we were like ready to go to we had to prove that it was final, everything was good, and they were a little behind us at that point, so it was fantastic. But yeah, Scott and Margaret and Terry have hired a lot of people just to do our small parts assemblies. They assemble our pop bumpers, which are unique to us, our flippers, our slingshots.
It's trickle sideways economics.
Yes. Yeah. And as far as, like you say, kind of like cooperation, I love that. I don't think pinball needs to be this backbiting, bickering, fighting thing like it was in the early 90s where, you know, everybody was duking it out. we live, thrive, and survive together. I mean, if the pinball economy is healthy, we all do well. If it falls, we're all in trouble. So anything we can do, I mean, we're all going to do our own thing anyway and kind of have our different business philosophies on how we want to approach game sales and all that kind of stuff and titles, and it's great. But the more commonality there is, the better it is for all of us. Any questions? Or
yeah, we got like 25 minutes.
Sure.
Rob Zombie was, I assume, a dream theme for yourself.
It's one of a handful, yes.
So as you guys go forward from contract work and like licensed mm-hmm. titles, how are you approaching the titles you pick in terms of theme? Personal dream themes from you guys and the team, or how are you approaching that?
All our decisions for themes are pretty much done by committee. I mean, if it's a contract gig, then it is what it is, and that's right. Fine. But as far as us working on a particular title, I can tell you that the licenses that we're working with right now are things that we genuinely care about. And it's just going to make a whole lot better game if you really are into what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm getting it. I'm pumped about.
I think some of the delay here with kind of getting Ben fully on board is, number one, we needed to grow to get to a point where we could work together with Ben and not expect him to do a lot of stuff on faith.
And we could pay him.
And we could just flat out pay him, you know. But also it's taken a while to kind of get a license that may or may not be in that spooky realm that Ben was truly passionate about and cared and wanted to work on.
Yeah, because when you look at licenses, you know, like, oh, we want to do that. And even if the license is moving along, it can be very, very slow, even if it's good to go. So, yeah, you have to just wait a lot of the time. It's just kind of a waiting game. So it's like, you know, we have to line up what we want to do with the license that's available, with the company that talks to us. And so getting those puzzle pieces to sync up, that can take time. But
figuring out who all has to get paid, how much, and what percentage.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you have to write someone a check for, like, $35 or something ridiculous?
Yes.
I had to write one person that had something to do with 1 minute's worth of a Rob Zombie song, $17.38.
Yeah, like... It
was like an eighth of a percent. It was ridiculous what I had to sit down and figure out math-wise on that stuff.
But if you hadn't, they could have sued you.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But you literally, I mean, like, hey, here's your song. That's not how it works. You have to do the homework on every song, and every person that was in the studio that had any credit whatsoever as a songwriter is going to get paid something. Now, the bulk of it goes to Rob. Clearly, he's the main guy, but... On some cases, it was 100% to Rob. In other cases, it was down to, like Katie said, just 1% or 2% to somebody else.
Yeah. There were 3 songs that it was Rob and then 3 other music companies themselves. And then 2 of those companies I had to break down and send separate checks because it was 2 different parties in that particular company. It's like... How do you guys figure... How do you know this stuff?
Lawyers.
Yeah. And record companies collapse and get sold to other industries.
And then Cobalt got bought out by somebody else. And
Cobalt Vixen now.
Yeah, yes. Now it's Cobalt Vixen. And Cobalt needed 1 check, but Vixen needed an equal amount check because it had to be divvied out to equals. And it's... Licenses are not easy.
But to be clear, we're going to keep doing licenses.
like if we ever did Roadhouse, obviously the greatest movie ever made.
Nice shirt, Ben.
Yeah. Well, you know, as an example, we're not. We should, but we're not. You know, Patrick Swayze's dead. So, you know, just having that image would cause a lot of problems. The Pinball Arcade, you guys are familiar with that app on the phones? Like, they did a Kickstarter to get the reproduction rights for the Addams Family pinball machine digitally, and most of it was having to deal with, like, Raul Julia's estate. Or, like, older movies, not everyone's going to be alive, and it just... gets more and more complex, and yeah, it's not super easy, but people do like licensed titles, so ultimately it is worth it. It just takes a little bit more effort,
and we will at some point do some original stuff again. We know that, but to kind of just
by original, you mean non-licensed?
Yeah, original themes to us.
Well, would anyone like to see a sequel to America's Most Haunted? Oh, 2 people, sold. Oh, let's do it.
We may do need to rethink that one.
Yeah.
Hey, that's my idea.
No, we would love to do a sequel to America's Most Haunted, but really jazz it up about 10 notches, and we've talked about...
Well, and it would be urban legends, not ghosts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It would be a completely... same
Jersey
quirky
Devil
crew.
Like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jersey Devil, Chupacabra, Mothman.
Oh, there's tons of really
alien.
Weird creatures out there we can play.
And
with,
every creature
so.
Would have, like, they'd have a personality.
Personality,
so the Chupacabra
voice.
Would be a sexy Latin lover. And the alien would want to probe you. Bigfoot would want help
right.
with a date. Jersey Devil would try to open a casino.
I don't know if he knows it yet or not, but Dennis will be the voice of Bigfoot in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd have lines like, hey, can you help me find a good back hair removal specialist? That's because I would make the creatures are all nice. None of them
oh,
are
yeah.
evil like our ghosts.
Right.
Except for the alien, maybe, who would have to be Brian Kelly. Like, ooh, I'm going to probe you later.
So, yes, we want to bring back, like, the same people that helped with America's Most Haunted and just make them completely different but similar voiced characters.
But that'll be further down the road.
Yes.
We have yeah. too many other commitments
first. The timeline right now is we're over halfway on Rob Zombie, which is fantastic. We're getting quicker all the time. We have another contract gig and Domino's kind of going in there.
So you'll be doing three games
we'll
at
be,
once.
Yeah, for a brief time here, we're going to have actually three games on the production line, which I won't do that again.
How's your blood pressure?
I'm on medication. I'm doing all right.
He's on new medication.
Yes. So the contract gig, which is what it is. We'll announce that soon. I am working on a licensed game right now. That will be the next official spooky pinball game, and that's being kind of done by committee as well. I need some help with design. I know that. And then following that will be Mr. Heck. So, but he'll basically start working pretty much right away.
I'm working on a new super rotisserie that's even better than my last one. It's going to be great. It's going to, like, lock on both ends. And I'm going to have a soldering stand on it, so you can be like, boop, 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 and like, whoop. And I'm going to start in foam core, because foam core is, or Nordmanite.
Nordmanite.
Yeah.
You had a question, sir?
Can you tell us how did the relationship with Domino's come about? And what was it like working with a non-entertainment company, you know, working with their IP and producing, like,
well, they've had a lot of entertaining commercials in the past. I mean, everyone remembers the Noid and his Pizza Smasher, so I wouldn't... That's a form of entertainment.
Yeah, too. I mean, well, they had video games and
yeah,
all kinds
was
of... That was the
yeah,
first
the
thing.
Ness game.
When you bring it up, that was the first thing I... When it became apparent that this was really going to happen, we've been approached, Ben and I both have been approached by several companies that were looking for, like, an advertising piece, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it... When they
and, Highway Pinball is doing the Bacardi rum, right? Yes.
Right. But it always comes down to when you tell them the costs, even if you're trying to keep it simple, it's expensive. And they always walk away. Always.
Well, almost always.
Adam Gasek from Domino's approached us at Pinball Life literally last expo. 1 year that game came together. He's like, I know you read my email, and I'm going to stick with it. We're going to get this done. He was very persistent.
It was more like 6 months, actually, right?
Yeah. Well, we had to have it in Vegas.
In June, right?
Yeah, the middle of June. So
they approached us. They saw what we had done on America's Most Haunted and Rob Zombie, and they, for whatever reason, chose us. I was honored that they did. They agreed to, hey, look, here's your development. We're going to buy so many games no matter what. And everything we sell beyond that is gravy, and it's all a big chunk of that is still going to charity. So they have a wonderful in-house program called the Domino's Partners Foundation. I've learned a lot about Domino's. I get to see the world's fastest pizza maker with KT in Vegas. That was insane. Dude's making like 6 pizza in 30 seconds. But yeah, I mean, they stuck with it. They were really, really cool about it. The layout... They kind of, like, napkin sketched and handed to us was 13 shots. I talked them down to 9, which I still think is, for a commercial game, you just want it to shoot easy and be fun. But the first thing we told them was we got to have the Noid. And I'm proud to say when you see the Noid on the TV commercials, like, right now they have this goofy commercial where you can win a date with the Noid, and this girl is, like, on a motorcycle with the Noid. That came back because of the pinball machine. They had written that off. That was long gone. And
didn't some crazy guy dressed up as
the Let's not talk about that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was a guy named Noid, and it was sketchy.
Remember that. They remember the
they
Noid.
They remember the Noid. Yeah. So yeah, it was really really cool. I'm thrilled that we've gotten the chance to work with Domino's, and I hope we get to do more of that kind of stuff. We've actually had other companies since then contact us.
I think once you build something, you kind of open the floodgates. And even if other companies were worried about the cost before, they're like, "Wow, this can happen."
Yeah, and it would be nice. We've talked about it, and I you know, Stern just did the same thing with Nelly to the Pabst Can Crusher. We'd like to have like a platform that when a company approaches us, the engineering's already done, and we could just possibly change that up a little bit to kind of keep that in check. So,
yeah, I've noticed that myself in my own work. As long as you put your work on the internet, companies go out there and they'll look for you. And even if you're some kid in your basement, oh, shit, that sounds bad. I didn't mean that. I meant like when I used to work from home, they would still be like, okay, yeah, we'll work with you. You know, I've done stuff for like Intel, AMD, Microsoft, like pretty much every video game
developer. Spooky pinball.
Spooky pinball. You guys have the best cheese ball collection, so that's always good.
We do. Yes, sir.
So Rob Zombie sold out
mm-hmm.
instantly. It was 300 units.
Yep.
You mentioned on the inside your next pinball 500.
Yep.
What are some of the obstacles that you see in delivering those pinballs and making them in a kind of timing manner or faster than
Yeah, we don't quite have the luxury. I mean, Stern's got, what, probably 180 people on the floor.
100,000 square feet.
Yeah, at 100,000 square feet. They can kind of compartmentalize those jobs and just have somebody doing the same thing over and over. If we do that to the 12 people in our shop, they are going to lose their minds in about a week. So we kind of let them take on more. You know, they learn how to do an entire play field from the ground up. They start like Bug here did, putting together thousands of switches, and you know
that's where you lose your mind completely.
Yeah, I mean, I think there will come a point where Chuck will have to adopt more of an assembly line strategy to get it working.
We're kind of more of a varied version of that, where our guys get to do more, and right. It keeps them from getting completely bored. And we can move people from department to department. I want them to be able to handle different responsibilities. Yeah,
like. We were further ahead on playfields last week, while we had been on vacation, first family vacation. But we had all the games to, and you know, final play test and all this and that. So we're like, okay, guys, guess what you're gonna do today? Everybody gets to play pinball today, and they were all play testing and writing down. Okay, this correct this, do that. You know, with the little post notes and going through and making corrections. So Charlie could. Go in and say, okay, this, we're good. Wrap it up, let's go.
But in essence, the biggest challenge, especially with Spooky, and I think any boutique company to date, there really is no textbook. There's no manual to tell you how to do this. The biggest challenge is, and we've run into this a little bit on Rob Zombie. It hasn't been bad because there's a wait list 8 miles long. The next shiny thing tends to get people that are in on the game to go, maybe I want that other game more. So you're constantly kind of in a race against time. Yeah. We can't build so fast that our people are out of work and sitting around for 6 months. And we need to keep that steady, which is why we're taking on these contract gigs and trying to get Ben on a game while I'm doing a game. So that I'm sure Dennis and would tell you, you know, Williams, the worst thing you have is a production shutdown on the line. That's terrible. That will kill a business quickly.
That's where Cactus Canyon came from, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Good example. We want to be able to do 500 games a year. Right now, we are Rob Zombie, all 300 will be done in a little over 1 year from the time that we started manufacturing to the time we're finished.
Is that faster than you thought originally?
That's,
it is, isn't it?
That's very quick.
Because the main reason you had that number was like, here's how many I think I can safely build in the amount of time with the license. Yeah. It's more about how long you have to build a game versus how many games you're going to build.
And you always have a contract with a license for a certain amount of time. Like Rob Zombie, it was 3 years. That gave us 1 year to completely finish the development and 2 years to manufacture all 300.
A lot of people have asked, you know, why didn't you sell more Rob Zombie games? And yeah, the answer is Chuck wanted to be safe. He didn't want to oversell what he could actually build. And he's over-delivered, so now you can safely move up to the next number.
Right. Right. And it was this, you know, it was a natural progression, 150 America's Most Haunteds. It took us almost 2 years to build those. So now we're doing 300 in just a little over a year. Yeah. And it was
500.
It was just the safest number I could pick that we wouldn't be making somebody wait 3 years for a game.
Can you handle building 10,000 Bible adventures?
No.
I mean, we could
not
totally
not today I can't.
Maybe we'll have to work up 9,000.
Announced Rob Zombie, how many employees did you have? Two or three?
Three.
And then as we were building the new shop and moving into the new shop, we've hired probably 8 or 9 since then.
Yep.
So the production rate picked up extremely since you announced it, which is allowing us to do more units in the next games.
In a way, it was kind of good that AMH sold slowly because we were building them slowly.
Yes.
I mean, if it would have been like a, you know, surefire license of the decade, and then everyone would have been like, where's my game? So by the time we got the production up to speed, the game also became popular, and then the rest is history. A few more questions?
Sure.
So I guess part of the appeal for collectors is having a limited run and a run and an exclusive game. And you guys are just kind of answering the question in, you know, you didn't limit the numbers because, you know, as a marketing strategy,
we limited AMH as a marketing strategy.
Yeah, we did.
When it wasn't selling fast, we're like, okay, if we put a cap on this, then people will buy it faster, and it worked. That was deliberate, but Rob Zombie was more about actually building them and being strategic. As far as LEs are concerned, I think we're going to try to get away
LEs
from that.
LEs are gone. I'm not doing another LE. We did Rob Zombie LEs as kind of a thank you to the AMH customers.
The game already was so limited.
I never dreamed in a million years that of 150 America's Most Haunted customers, more than 1 in 3 would want Rob Zombie. It's just a completely different. It's a dark. It's theme. It's very adult. It's.
We got some pushback.
Got my butt kicked because I only made 50. And literally out of 150 America's Most Haunted customers, 130 bought Rob Zombie.
Because they got the first crack at the LE.
Yes.
So people who hadn't bought AMH basically had no chance to get an LE. Of course, that is a way to thank the people who took a chance on AMH.
Yeah, and without that initial group of 150 people crazy enough to...
There would not be a Rob Zombie.
There would be no us. We wouldn't be here. So that's why we did it. But going forward, no. And there will not, mark my words, ever be another run of America's Most Haunted. There will not be another run of Rob Zombie. When those 300 are done, it's done.
We would love to take more money.
Yeah. I would love, trust me, the engineering's done, the games are there. I would love to sell a bunch of them and cash in, but I think once you cross that line.
I could buy a Tesla car, but no. We'll make a new game and sell you that.
Yes, we'll make another game, we'll sell you that. But once you cross that line and you go back and say, well, customers demanded it, so we're going to, here's another 300 Rob Zombies, you're shot.
Yeah, a couple more questions.
Going forward, like you said, where people that were America's Most Haunted got the benefit to get on the Rob Zombie, are you continuing that? Or as you expand, being like, you know what, when we announce a new game, it's an open field where it wants to get on the game.
Yeah. Oh, no.
KT has very strong opinions on this going forward. I would like to keep the people that took care of us deserve to get on the next game if they want it. And that's, again, a part of the reason that we're raising the numbers. We go to 500 units, so if all 300 people that bought Rob Zombie and AMH want it, they should have a shot. But I'll pass it over to Katie.
What I'm doing at this point, and I'm answering it when people email me, if you have previously bought a game from us, you're already on the customer list. When we announce it, the customer list, those people that are on my customer list will get first refusal. They're not getting anything extra or special. They're just going to get first refusal. And then after the week, their week is up, if they refused or didn't answer, then it's open to the public after that. But
the more games we build, it'll become less and less of a problem because the 150 AMH owners will be like a minority, so they're, you know, it's not going to really affect our run of 500.
Right, it won't. And it's in the more we build, the more customers I'm going to have, the harder it's going to be to say, oh, well, so and so bought this, but they didn't buy that, so do they qualify? No, it can't work.
We already handed them $1,000 bill with AMH, so.
Yeah, one more.
I saw Doc had his hand up. Oh, okay. Another question?
Oh, hey, we do have one more announcement.
What's that?
Oh, no.
Stand up, boy.
Stand up?
Stand up.
Boy. New shirts.
Oh, yes. New shirts available at the Double Danger booth. They kind of partnered with us to do some really cool shirts. You can pick these up if you care to do one. It's Double Danger is very, very cool. One just walked in the door over there.
Yeah.
Good time. And they're, yeah.
Right
now, Dan's got one back there.
But after Expo, you can get them either through us, our website,
or Double Danger. Website. Yeah. They're a very cool apparel company, and they do some really neat stuff. So.
Oh, hey, what if we...
Yep.
What if we just close this out by asking people what kind of themes they might like to see from us?
Yes, please do. That's a great idea, Ben.
5 minutes.
Futurama.
I would love to do Futurama. Yes.
Ben's mentioned that 800 times.
It would be a great theme because it would fit rules very well. Like you're going on deliveries, the different shots of different planets.
Silent Hill? Okay, that's a first. I like that.
The Evil Dead.
Would love to do that. That has been discussed. So is Futurama.
Come back there.
Roofer.
Monsters and Scooby-Doo.
Monsters and Scooby-Doo?
I almost would... I'm not kidding. I would almost feel guilty if we did Monsters because I know John Borg has been dying to do that game forever.
Plus, it's on Joe Kamenkow's card, so that might mean he's got something tied up on
it. Seems like people really want that theme. I mean, I don't understand it because I'm too young. I'm too young. That's weird.
Dan.
Blues Brothers.
What do you think about a Blues Brothers?
Yes.
Can you imagine designing that and be like, ugh, we got half a pack of smokes, it's dark, we're wearing sunglasses, let's finish designing this game. I'd love to do a Blues Brothers game.
Ash and the Evil Dead.
Yeah, the Evil Dead,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think I heard you have one of your podcasts, you tried it, but is there any chance you could get Mystery Science Theater?
I actually had Mystery Science Theater. It was there, we were talking to Jim Mallon. And we had Kevin Murphy doing the voice of Crow and Trace, who did the original Crow, Servo and Crow. I am backwards. We were absolutely going to do that game. And then it got really quiet and weird. And that's when I think Joel stepped in and they bought the rights back to it so they could reboot the show. So that kind of went away. I would love to do Mystery Science Theater.
I heard from someone, they were at a convention, and Trace was saying that, we were going to make a pinball machine, and now we're not, and I'm sad. And I'm like,
we made Pro-T Robot sad.
Rick and Morty?
That would fit pinball really well. I think it might be too young for most of the buyers, but it would be a great theme, yes.
Somebody else shout something. Throw it out. Yes.
Right.
Bug, would you like to do a Friday the 13th
game? That is about my dream game.
And of course, we'd love to do Godzilla, but we're trying.
Bible Adventures.
No.
Yeah. How many people out here would actually buy Bible Adventures if it was the same price as Rob Zombie?
Yes, two.
Two.
Brian Kelly and Paul Reno. Wow.
All right, a couple more, and then we got to wrap this up.
Come on. Somebody else has got an idea. Yes. Yes and yes. I would do that in 5 minutes. Texas Chainsaw. I would love to do Jaws too, and I'm kind of, but you just need the boat and the shark, and the ball rolls off the boat into the shark's mouth.
There's only one enemy.
That's it. Jason.
Mad Max. That could be cool. I like Mad Max. Maybe
you're talking the new one or the old one?
Just Mad Max.
Okay.
Hey, I actually think Fury Road is better than any of the first three movies. So
I say it's a quadrilogy. I'm perfectly fine with it.
Yes, sir.
What are some good licenses that are not available?
Good licenses that are unavailable?
I will tell you flat
Harry
out.
Potter?
Yeah, Harry Potter's way out there.
By the time someone actually gets that, no one's going to care about Harry Potter anymore.
I tried very hard to get Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and I'm sad to say that fell through. There's just too many parties involved, and I think there's some medical issues that are convoluting that license at this point. I would have loved to have done that. Yeah, it would have been a complete Medieval Madness ripoff, but, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like we would be making a ripoff of the ripoff, and we'd have to be as good as the ripoff, and I was actually concerned if that was possible.
Yes? I think a theme that would be a great game. I've not heard many people talk about this. Airplane 1 and 2.
We thought about that when we were sitting in the airport. How much fun would it be to be sitting in the airport waiting for a flight, go over and play Airplane?
How much fun would it be to sit at the airport?
While you're playing in the airport.
Oh.
We need to cut it easy.
Yeah,
if
we need to go.
If anybody didn't get a keychain, see me after.
Yeah, if you want a spooky keychain or anything, Katie's got some up here for free.
And you can stop by Matt's booth where there's a Domino's.
Yep, go play Domino's in there. No pressure. It's super cheap. It's $5,300, which is almost free now. And
ouch. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, everybody.